This is El Puente Podcast, POC conversation at the intersection of race, sexuality, religion, politics, art, music, and everything in between. Don't just sit there, stand up. Don't just listen, join the conversation with Kim, Dave, and Michael. Welcome, everybody. Welcome. This is Michael.
And this is Dave.
And this is not Kim.
Kim's not here right now.
No, she has strep.
Ugh.
Poor thing.
Yeah.
But we will try to carry on with our femininity to make up for her not being here.
We will bring our femininity to bear.
Yes.
For the lack of femininity that's in this room right now. Kim, get well soon. We'll see you next week.
Yes.
This week in Pop the News and Feed the Children, a big story that has been on everybody's mind for this last week. We are, of course, referring to the ordeal, the debacle in Philadelphia. You may have seen all about it. Starbucks coming under fire for the way it treats customers of color. And by now, I'm sure you've seen the viral video of the two young black men, Rashawn Nelson and Dante Robinson, getting arrested in a Philadelphia Starbucks, waiting for a third friend to appear for a meeting. And wow, there's a lot going on there. Have you seen all about that news, Michael?
Oh, yes, of course. I mean, how could you not?
It's everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, well, the news is that the two finally decided to speak out. And after about a week of silence, they finally took to the airwaves to tell their side of the story. It was discovered that the two had actually been waiting in the Starbucks for no more than 2 minutes.
Wow.
Before the police were called on them. As the two recall, they asked to use the bathroom. And I guess the employee said that bathrooms are only for paying customers. So according to Rashawn Nelson, he didn't think anything of it when she told him that. And they sat down to wait for their third friend. Well, apparently, according to their story, it was only about 2 minutes later that the police arrived to handle the so-called trespassing disturbance.
How many times have we done that?
Have we sat down in a Starbucks waiting for somebody?
Or anywhere.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that's the big thing that's gotten a lot of people's attention about this story. Mm-hmm. The fact that this is something that everybody does. You know, you go to Starbucks and you wait for your friends and you're not going to order until, you know, your friends arrive. Well, Starbucks CEO Kevin Johnson, probably in agreement with us, he actually met with the two young black men. And he apologized for the way they were treated. According to a company spokesman who declined to disclose the details of the meeting, he did confirm that the CEO did actually meet with the two young men. I really, really, really want to know what those people talked about in that room, don't you?
Oh, definitely. Yeah.
Can you just imagine? Yeah. What do you think they said?
Well, I'm imagining that he apologized profusely. The video that he released shortly after the incident on his own, did you get to see that?
I did.
I mean, he seemed very, very sorry for what had happened. I didn't get a sense that he was just doing damage control, but you know.
You felt like he was being genuine.
Yeah, no, I do, I do.
Oh, I agree with that.
So I'm hoping that that came out in the face-to-face conversation as well.
In the conversation. Mm-hmm. I'm sure what's really on everybody's mind is, are these two guys going to get Starbucks lifetime free Starbucks for the rest of their lives?
Right.
I mean, you know, I think they've earned it after that. There was also a op-ed written by the woman who actually took the now infamous viral video. Her name is Melissa Del Pino. She actually recorded that video that we've all seen now several times. Mm-hmm. She actually wrote an op-ed on CNN about why she felt the need to tweet out that video that she recorded. And it's a very interesting read. We'll link to it on our website, so you guys can take a listen or take a read of this this op-ed. She brings up some very interesting points. As a white woman, she notes that this is, like you said, this is something that people do all the time. I mean, we go to Starbucks, we wait for friends. We're not going to order until we wait something. Sometimes we use the bathroom before we order. I know I've done that a gazillion times. And she was really taken back by how those two young men were treated so drastically different so quickly. And she was horrified how it escalated out of control so quickly. Yeah. So
I mean, even you can hear on the video, like there are other customers chiming in to the police and they did nothing.
Yeah.
And they still took them away.
Yeah. Which is, of course, you know, a whole other issue, the way police officers are oftentimes going to treat, you know, young people of color, young black men specifically. Lots of issues going on there. Later in the show, we're going to talk about Starbucks' response to the whole controversy and talk about what Starbucks is doing to make it right. But we'll be talking about that a little bit later in the show. Yes, for now, the news is that the CEO of Starbucks has apologized to the two young men, and those two young men did speak out finally after about a week of silence, talking about what happened to them in Philadelphia. Wow, I want some coffee now.
Now we go to I Hear Ya, our segment that deals with music. And on a positive note.
On a week where we need some positive notes.
Yes, excuse the pun. Kendrick Lamar becomes the first rapper to win a Pulitzer.
Wow.
Yes.
That really happened?
Yes. The first non-jazz or classical musician to win a Pulitzer.
Wow. What's the category or what is the competition?
For music.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Yeah. Which is like unexpected. I think a lot of people did not expect something like this to happen ever. Especially in the wake of how things are in the country right now. Well, I guess Pulitzer is an international thing. Just kind of goes to show that the power of art, you know?
Yeah, it also goes to show the evolution and the power of hip-hop. Mm-hmm. I mean, hip-hop music now is really taken over. Mm-hmm. I think a lot of music critics would agree that rock and roll and a lot of other popular forms of music have kind of died away, and or at least in terms of popular culture have really kind of ceded their way to hip-hop's dominance. Mm-hmm. And wow, what an amazing feat that not only are hip-hop artists kind of taken over all of popular culture, but they're also winning awards like the Pulitzer.
Mm-hmm. And it's very telling because of just the content of his lyrics and just how powerful a message this is.
Yeah, and I think that I really appreciate what Kendrick really brings to hip hop, his positivity when we need positive images. And I grew up at a time when hip hop was really going through a kind of I don't want to speak ill of hip hop, but it was going through a phase where a lot of the images being brought out were very negative and very, you know, I lived through that whole gang music kind of renaissance where a lot of the imagery was really, I would say, detrimental to our communities. I know a lot of people would argue and say they're just reflecting the life that they know, but there's a fine line between reflection and glorification. And I think that for a long time, hip hop really definitely delved into the glorification. Mm-hmm. But it's great to see artists like Kendrick and, you know, Common, J. Cole, all these other rappers nowadays who are really bringing a new consciousness to hip hop. And wow, kudos for the Pulitzer for being down enough to recognize that.
Exactly.
Yeah. So, and have you heard Damn, his latest album?
Oh, yeah, definitely. I downloaded the day it came out.
What an amazing, amazing
damn,
album.
Damn, it is good.
It's good.
This week for the clapback heard around the world, we're not going to go to Twitter. This one was a literal clapback.
This one was a literal clapback.
Yes, and it was epic.
It was juicy.
It was powerful.
It was about time.
Yes. You know, for many, many years, people have spoken about how on RuPaul's Drag Race, for those of you who don't watch it, it's a drag queen competition. The race card is kind of shifty, and just the way sometimes drag queens of color can be portrayed negatively with respect to their tempers and things like that, and the way they're edited. And so one queen this season, they're on season 10, she was not having it. And so during one of the episodes of Untucked, which is kind of the after show, She had one white queen poking at her, and she clapped back, and then the white queen started crying, and she pretty much, like, broke the fourth wall and was like, no, stop. We are not going to play into this narrative that you mess with me, I defend myself, and you cry, and now you're the victim, and I'm the angry black woman. And that was just so powerful to see on TV. And so, yeah, I just wanted to give her a shout out. But yeah, she's literally been, in the past two episodes, she's not having it. She's not taking it from people. She's a Chicago queen.
A Chicago queen.
Bitch, I'm from Chicago. And yeah.
Do you guys know who we're talking about?
If not, you need to see it. This season's been really, really good.
This season of Drag Race has been incredible. We're, of course, talking about the drag queen Vixen, who is from Chicago. And the episode, if you haven't seen it, it was episode number...
Five, I believe.
Was it five?
Well, four and five. She's had this conversation on a couple of Untucks now.
Yeah. It was a really amazing moment to see on TV because... She really attacked the idea or the stereotype of black people as somehow angry whenever we are the ones thrust upon to defend ourselves. Mm-hmm. And it was just a really great clapback moment. Mm-hmm. I mean, that moment where she was like, you know, you don't get to do this. You don't get to attack me. Mm-hmm. And then I defend myself. And then you start crying. And then I'm the angry bitch. Yes. I'm the angry black bitch.
I'm the villain. Yeah. And, you know? And the same thing happened on the most recent episode of Untucked. Or was it the previous one? I can't remember. I'm a little confused. I think it was episodes 3 and 4 or 4 and 5. With another white queen who purposely and admittedly was poking at her. And she stood up for herself. You know? And if you were to watch that out of context, I could see where people could think, oh, she's just a bitch and that's it. But no, she's defending herself, rightly so. And it literally ended with her clapping back, where she was like, bitch, go have your cigarette.
That's actually a meme now. I don't know if you've seen it.
No, I haven't.
Yeah, they made that into a meme. It's juicy. Bitch, go have your cigarette is the new way of telling these stupid-ass bitches to quit fucking with me.
Oh.
I'm going to start using that. Bitch, go have your cigarette.
Yes.
Yeah, it was really good. In case you guys haven't realized, Michael is a huge Drag Race fan.
Yes. As is Dave.
I'm such a fan. Why is he trying to pin this on me? Super, super fan. I love it, love it, love it, love it, love it, love it. So, clap back heard around the world. Goes out to Vixen from Chicago, letting all these haters know you're going to come for the bear, you're going to poke the bear, you're going to get the claws. And now, opinions are like assholes. Everybody's got them, and some of them don't stink. Today, we're going to be expanding on the Starbucks controversy. And today's big question is, can Starbucks make it right? For those who aren't aware, Starbucks is planning to close over 8,000 of its stores on May 29th to conduct what it calls implicit bias training for all of its employees. After facing the controversy over ejecting two innocent black men from a Philadelphia store with no rhyme or reason, the CEO has announced that all employees will get cultural sensitivity training over an entire day at Starbucks. And we want to know what you guys think. Is Starbucks doing enough to make it right?
Yeah. If you want to speak back to us, remember, we're at bocamadremedia@gmail.com, bocamadremedia@gmail.com. We'd love to get your take on this.
What do you think, Michael?
I think it's very positive. It's very proactive for the company to be doing this. Implicit bias is a very, very in term right now. Dealing with not being outwardly racist. We see that very evidently in a lot of people in this country right now, since the last election. They're showing their asses. But there are also biases that we have that are implicit that we carry within us, everybody. And some of those are racially based, and people need to be aware of it. And so I think something like this is very powerful. In fact, I think every company should have training on implicit biases, how to recognize that you have them, how to change them mm-hmm. if they're detrimental to relationships.
Yeah.
So I think it's great.
Yeah. I think a lot of naysayers are out there thinking and thinking about what Starbucks is doing and thinking, they're just trying to, you know, protect their brand. They saw something really bad happen in one of their stores, and the CEO is just trying to do this to try to get ahead of the story. But I have to say, closing down all of your stores mm-hmm. for one day.
For one store that had this issue.
Think about that, ladies and gentlemen. I mean, that's a lot of money that, you know, Starbucks is not going to make in mm-hmm. one day. Mm-hmm. And I think it really does show a dedication on the part of the CEO to really try to make right something that he, I think, generally believes is fundamentally wrong. Mm-hmm. So I definitely have to give kudos for him on that. I will say I'm a little conflicted because what am I going to do on May 29th when I need to get my coffee? But I guess in the grand scheme of things, it's probably for the best. Having said that, I'm going to call a little bullshit on a term that I've been hearing thrown mm-hmm. around a little yes. too much lately. So, okay, a lot has been made of this term unconscious bias. Mm-hmm. And in fact, I think the CEO in his statement that he released also referred to the unconscious biases of people mm-hmm. towards people of color. And I think after I kind of sat on that a little bit and thought about it, I think I'm ready to call bullshit on that term, unconscious bias.
Are you differentiating that from implicit?
Yeah, a little bit. I am because I think unconscious bias is a term that's been kind of put out there to let white people off the hook. Mm-hmm. It's almost like saying, oh, they're biased, but they're unconscious about their biases. So we should kind of, you know, their biases aren't as bad or aren't as dangerous or aren't as harmful because yes. they're unconscious. Like, they're not really thinking about them.
Yeah, it's like, oh, she didn't mean to kill this person. She was sleepwalking. It's not her fault.
She didn't mean to call the cops on the black people. She's just unconsciously biased. So mm-hmm. let's give her a pass. Mm-hmm. And I think at some level, don't all people kind of know about their biases? Aren't biases kind of conscious anyway? I mean, they're your conscious thoughts that you're having. Whether or not you choose to recognize those biases yes. is one thing or yes. not. Whether or not you want to call that bias, that is another story. Mm-hmm, but mm-hmm. you're at least aware of your opinions that you're generating about people who don't look like you. So I think I'm ready to call bullshit on that term. I think we need to stop using that term. Mm-hmm. Just like I think there's another term that we need to stop using. And that's white supremacy. But there'll be a whole other opinion piece on that one, mm-hmm. ladies and gentlemen. Mm-hmm. I don't want to get on that topic just yet. But what do you think?
Just a teaser.
Just a teaser. Yeah. Listen next week. But what do you think? I mean, unconscious bias, is that yeah. a term that we need to get rid of?
I think implicit is a thing. Unconscious is not. It's a very dangerous word to use because, yeah, like you're saying, it strips them of responsibility. Mm-hmm. Whereas implicit means you're not outwardly or directly acting on, say it's racism mm-hmm. is the bias.
Yeah.
But you can at least, like you're saying, recognize it. I'm dealing with a situation right now that has a lot to do with this at the school I teach at.
Really?
We have, we have a white family that's come in and tried to take over the school. And mind you, this school I've been there for like 17 years. It's always been predominantly Latinx and African-American school. Mm-hmm. And they've come in and they are trying to take over, and with this act of white savior complex kind of thing going on, they're trying to take over and save all these black and brown children.
What are they saving them from?
Themselves.
Yeah.
And their lifestyle.
Yeah. Like, we have to come in here and make this school better for yes. their sake.
And so in that, I genuinely believe that they think they are doing the right thing. They are blind to this horrible bias mm-hmm. that they are basically judging our lifestyles and saying that they are not worthy of continuing and that theirs needs to replace ours.
Yeah.
Especially in the culture of the school.
Wow.
But I don't think that should get them off the hook.
Right.
You know, it is a bias. It is not explicit. They're not out there calling us, you know, spics and the N-word and all this stuff.
That you know of.
Well, that's what I'm saying. But, like, they're not outwardly doing it to our faces.
Not to your faces.
But they, you know, they're acting on these things that I think they actually believe is a positive thing. But they're...
Yeah.
Causing lots of damage to communities.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
You know, I had my own run-in with implicit, subconscious, unconscious, whatever you want to call it, bias the other day. I was down on East 6th Street, and I was going to a sandwich and bakery shop that I usually frequent whenever I'm working to pick up some sandwiches for me and my boss. And I went into the store, and I had this most... extraordinary experience, shall we say. I'll be gracious. I walked in. Let me paint the picture for you folks. I'm at work. I go get some sandwiches for me and my boss. And I walk in. Keep in mind, I'm nicely dressed. Because when I'm serving, I'm like dressed and pressed. I'm looking good. I walk in. I'm feeling good.
Should that even matter, though?
It shouldn't matter. But it is very important to this point. I walk in, and the server's reaction when I walked in went from bright beaming smile to frown instantaneous. I was like, oh, God, here we go. Mm. And she was ringing up another customer, and you can tell she was very not happy about my being in there. For all I know, she probably thought that I was like a street person who was there to like ask to use the bathroom, the way she was looking at me.
Wow.
So, yeah.
So no hi.
No welcome. Hi. Did not acknowledge my existence.
I'll help you in a minute.
None of that. Not even just a frown and a return to the customer. Well, she finishes ringing up the customer, and he's like taking his sweet ass time, putting his money back in his wallet and everything. She still has not acknowledged my existence yet to order my food. Out walks another service person, another white woman. And as she's walking out, she doesn't acknowledge me either. Just at that time, a group of white people, customers, come walking in. She immediately goes, oh, hey, guys, what can I get for you? I was literally ignored by two of these people. And you can imagine, by that point, I was done.
Oh, yeah.
And I let him have it.
The earrings came off.
The earrings came off. The wig was snatched. Yes, it was not pretty. Mm. And as you guys know, when you poke the bear, you're going to get the claws. Well, I gave these two the claws. let's just say I was very gracious about it. But I was like, you know, I'd like to order. And of course, they, of course, became really uncomfortable. And that's the thing. Any slight display of anger or frustration by a black man, instantaneously they go into like, oh my God, panic mode. Yeah, like, yeah. We gotta call the cops. I'm surprised they didn't call the cops on me. But she was so taken aback that I had the audacity to bring up the fact that she hadn't even acknowledged my existence. And I said, you've never made eye contact with me, and you never made eye contact with me, and I just wanna buy some sandwiches for me and my boss. So can we make that happen or not? Well, suffice it to say, long story short, after I ordered the sandwiches, the two Beckys disappeared completely. And they had to send one of the kitchen guys out with the sandwiches to give them to me because they were too afraid of the scary black man to give them give them the sandwiches.
Well, see, I don't see it as you going off on them. I see it as you doing a public service and giving them some implicit bias training.
I'd like to give them some training, all right. Which leads us to our next segment. It's called No Ma'am. No Ma'am. No Ma'am is about us calling out people who need to get called out. And in today's No Ma'am, I would like to dedicate this segment to those service workers out there, like the two Beckys that I encountered at the Easy Tiger Bake Shop on East 6th Street. You guys, just like Starbucks, should probably give some implicit bias training to your employees. Because if we've seen one thing from Starbucks, is that the biases of the people who work in these stores has to be addressed. Because what you end up doing is end up alienating and infuriating loyal customers like myself, who patron your business and do so with a smile. But because you guys refuse to address your own conscious, implicit biases, you keep perpetuating these bad, bad experiences. Mm-hmm. And so I had a great idea. Actually, I stole this idea from another website. But they had a great idea, Mike.
What is this?
They said, you know how we have Yelp?
Yes.
Where we review businesses?
Yes.
People of color like us need a new app called Welp.
Ooh.
In which we, you know, review businesses, but the ones that treat us like shit when we go into their business.
Yes. So does this involve us leaving whelps on their faces from cachetadas?
No, not physical whelping. It's just whelping. Like, instead of stars, they have, like, sad faces. So you can give them 5 sad faces. Mm. So Easy Tiger E6, you get 4 whelp sad faces.
2 for each Becky.
2 for each Becky for the treatment that I got. We'll see if it gets any better when I go in. But in No Ma'am this week, we calling out bad service workers who need some implicit bias training.
Real history has curves and shades. This is where we speak about people and moments in history that aren't amplified enough or given their due credit because of, you know, our history being written by white, cisgendered, male, European people.
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 Yeah.
Yeah. And so this week, since we are recording this on Earth Day.
It is Earth Day. Happy Earth Day.
Yes, happy Earth Day. I thought it would only be appropriate to focus on someone who was a catalyst, basically, for what we now celebrate as Earth Day, our modern environmental movement, which was really started because of the work of Rachel Louise Carson. She was a marine biologist and eventually a conservationist, and she wrote lots of books. And because of all her writings, she really advanced this idea of having an environmental movement, particularly. One of her books, Silent Spring, really focused on the idea of pesticides and their effects on the environment. So much so that, you know, it basically led to a lot of pesticides being banned and the development of the Environmental Protection Agency. In fact, in the early 80s, no, I'm sorry, in the 70s, she received the Presidential Medal of Freedom from Jimmy Carter. Of course, it was posthumous. But yeah, so at least she was acknowledged. And so now we're doing our own acknowledgement of Rachel Carson, Rachel Louise Carson, the mama of Mother Earth Day and the environmental movement.
Ay, mi gente. Ay. Or for translation, what's up with y'all? Y'all acting crazy. That's not a direct translation, but since this week's Ay Mi Gente is about mi gente, mi negras, my black people, I decided to do a little translation for you guys. This week, I am calling out young millennials and younger black kids out there who are not learning their history. Mm-hmm. Let me give you guys a little backstory. I'm an educator. And I teach students to do many, many things. And I had a student working on a project in my class recently in which he was doing a graphic design. He was doing a poster for me. Mm. And I went in to check on his images. In the background, he had a Confederate rebel battle flag.
Whoa.
Yeah. And, of course, I was like, what? And I said to him, you know, why did you choose to use that flag on this design for us? Mm-hmm. And he was like, well, I just thought it looked cool. And I said, but do you know what that flag symbolizes? Do you know what that flag represents, that flag means? And, of course, he just looked at me dumbfounded.
Oh, my gosh.
And I said to him,
How old is this
student? He's 17 years old.
Okay, so he's...
You know, he's a high schooler. He's about to graduate, mm-hmm. you know, in a year mm-hmm. or two. And I said, who's your history teacher? And I said, what are you guys talking about in history? What are you guys learning about? He said, I think it's the Cold War. I said, okay, did you ever learn about the Civil War? Or maybe have you ever Googled the Civil War? But it was just a eye-popping moment because this student had absolutely no connection whatsoever with the fundamentals of Black history. And it just made me very, very sad for him, obviously. And it made me a little angry. It made me a little angry at the fact that our education system is failing students so badly that, and particularly students of color, that we're not even getting any more the fundamentals of our own history. There's something fundamentally wrong about that, ladies and gentlemen, and we really need to fix that. But the reason why I want to dedicate this to Ay Mi Gente this week is because we also have the responsibility as parents, as teachers, as just people on this earth to make sure that we are getting the history, that we are passing down the stories to our to our offspring, that we are educating people. And we have to stop assuming that students are going to get that education that they need at elementary school, middle school, high school, because it's clearly not happening, and it's demonstrated by that one kid. We have to do this, folks. We can't be on the sidelines anymore. We have to take ownership of our education. We have to take ownership of our stories, and we have got to be informing the next generations, because if that one Black kid doesn't even know the history of the Confederate flag, what does that portend for the rest of us, ladies and gentlemen?
Exactly, no. And I can speak from my experience at the elementary school level that social studies takes a back burner, like in another kitchen across the street.
Yeah.
It's not there.
They don't teach it anymore.
I mean, you have to integrate it with your reading. So if you're doing a reading lesson, okay, you pick a book that has to do with social studies in some way. And so these kids don't know these things.
They don't get that education anymore. That is...
it's terrifying.
That is terrifying. And I wonder if it's by design, too.
Definitely. No, and there's... And I was actually going to say, there's this meme that I saw out there that said something along the lines of, you know, a government is not going to give you enough education to overthrow it.
Wow.
And that's...
Boom. Mine just exploded, ladies and gentlemen, all over the console here in the studio.
So you've got to do it on your own. And this comes from two teachers who are very passionate about advancing our youth. And we're doing what we can, but it's not going
to
be enough.
You can only do what you can as an educator. You know, we all have to step up to the plate, ladies and gentlemen. And if you're concerned about your child's future, you got to really get your skin in the game there and make sure they're learning what they need to learn. So big, big, big eye-opening experience this week. We got to step up to the plate.
And now we turn to our lecciones learned. In this segment, of course, we... do a little bit of Spanish lessons.
Spanish lessons. Yes. This is where we normally teach Kim some Spanish, and then we secretly laugh as she butchers it.
Yes. Not so secretly.
Not so secretly.
Yeah. Yeah, well, unfortunately, Kim's not here this week.
Yes.
Because of her strep. But we wanted to continue this lesson anyway, because we have listeners who possibly want to learn as well.
This is a very important lesson in Spanish, ladies and gentlemen.
Yes, yes. Very, very powerful word. Multifaceted.
If you're going to speak Spanish, especially in this hemisphere, you must understand this next word, ladies and gentlemen. It is that important. Mm-hmm. And we're, of course, talking about...
chingar.
Dun, dun, dun! We need a sound effect for that. Yes, we're, of course, talking about the verb chingar and all of its many beautiful uses. For those who are Spanish-speaking, especially descendants of Mexico, you know exactly what we're talking about. But for those of you who don't, Michael's going to break down the various uses of the word chingar.
Let me start with conjugating the verb chingar. Yo chingo. Tú chingas. Él o ella... chinga. Ellos chingan.
I know chingues way.
Exactly.
So let's explain what the verb chingar means for the listeners.
So it means, you know, to fuck. fuck it up.
Yeah.
Fuck shit up.
I mean, it means lots of things.
Yeah, no, no, no.
I mean, it can mean to fuck, right? Or to fuck with.
Yes.
And it can also be kind of a good thing, too. No chingues conmigo, right? That's like, don't fuck with me, right? Yeah. But if you're chingon, or, él es chingona.
As if adjective, yes.
That is actually a positive thing. It's like, you're like fucking badass, right?
You fuck shit up,
yeah, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, it can also mean like a lot of too. So for example, if I have un chingo de cosas que hacer, if I have a lot of stuff to do, right?
You got a fuckload of whatever it is.
I have a lot of stuff to do, right? Yeah. So it's like one of those words that really has lots and lots of meaning. It's kind of like, and if you don't know how to use it, you can get yourself in situations where I've been in Mexico where I totally fucked that shit up.
No chingaste.
Exactly. And I fucked that shit up bad. And so, like, I remember one time I was trying to use that word, and it was like, never use this word in mixed company, by the way, if you don't know how to use it.
Yeah.
But basically, like, everybody was like, oh my God, like, please stop. Please don't use that word anymore. So that's why we want to spend a little time to educate you guys about chingar. So, for example, never ever say chinga tu madre.
Oh no.
Because that is like the most offensive thing that you can say to somebody. That, of course, means, you know,
fuck your mama.
Exactly.
That'll start many a fight.
Right. But if you want to say that something's really cool, you could say, está chingón, which is actually a good thing. Okay. So just kind of practice it. Make sure you know how to use it if you're going to use it, you know, no chingas.
As always, we like to end on a positive note with our segment called Eso, Eso, Eso.
Eso, Eso, Eso.
And Dave is going to give us our SOSOSO this week.
This week, we're giving a special shout out to Alvin Irby from New York City, who was recently featured in a video produced by The Root Magazine, in which he talks about a program that he created called Barbershop Books. Alvin was inspired one day when he went to a barbershop to get a haircut when he saw a first grader sitting in the barbershop waiting for a haircut doing nothing. And the idea was dawned for him that it would be a great time for that kid to be practicing his reading. And the idea of the Barbershop Books was formed. The first reading space was put in a barbershop in 2014. The books in the barbershop focus mostly exclusively on Black stories and give a positive message to young Black children. And thanks to donations and grants, the program has spread to over 100 barbershops in 17 states.
Amazing.
So this is a really great story, and we wanted to make you guys aware of it so you can look for it, see if you can make a donation and help this program to grow. We really want to encourage literacy with Black and Brown students. We know that the figures, the statistics in this area, pretty bleak right now.
Yeah.
Mike, as an educator, you know more than most.
I work as a reading specialist in an elementary school, so I've seen this for many, many years. And this trend, whereas somebody racist might be like, oh, well, you know, Black and Brown kids are just not as intelligent. No. It all comes down to poverty.
Poverty is the killer.
It is. And because of poverty, parents of Black and Brown children generally don't get to spend as much time with their kids because they have to have one or more, two or more jobs to maintain their families and still be in poverty. And because of that, they're not picking up oral language vocabulary that helps when they transfer to text to understand what they're reading. And so having something like this in barbershops, which, you know, especially it being in an, you know, in African-American tradition, like barbershops are like very important social grounds.
Totally.
And so having these books there for these kids is amazing.
Yeah, it's a really great idea because, like you said, the barbershop is the center, really, of Black male life. It's a place that most of us go to at least once every 2 weeks. We spend so much of our time and money there. And what a great idea to dedicate some space in those places, mm-hmm. dedicated towards learning and literature. And so, Alvin, it was a great idea. We're so proud of you. So, guys, make sure you go out and check it out. We're going to link to a Facebook video The Root put out where they talk all about Alvin Irby and his program, Barbershop Books. Please, please make a contribution if you can and help that program grow. It's so good for us.
Yes.
Eso, eso, eso.
Thank you for listening this week to El Puente Podcast.
As always, we really appreciate you listening. If you have any comments, please make sure to leave them with us. Or if you have any ideas or things that you think we should be talking about, let us know.
Definitely. Share this podcast with your friends. Follow us on social media. We're on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter, El Puente Podcast. Feel free to email us if you'd like to contribute, either a text email or if you want to send us a voice recording, we'll include it in the episode. And always, you know, just kind of have that conversation with us. We're trying to build these bridges between all of us, so cross that bridge with us. We're stronger when we build puentes to connect POVs of POCs. Thank you for listening.